Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio. Let's Talk About It with your host, Scott Dudley, and myself, Maria Wyatt. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874, and also you can access this show through our podcast at kxoradio.com. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, and that pretty much sums up everything we have to say.
Yes.
No. Hey, welcome. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. We have another great show. Let's just jump right. Let's just do this. Welcome aboard. We have Alejandra Rodriguez. She's a...
Welcome back.
Yeah. It's a reoccurring event.
Yes.
She's a social worker, almost like running out of hands to count. It's a social worker four. Who knew? How high do you guys go? Four, is it?
Four.
Really?
So you're at the highest.
Yes.
You're the heavy-duty social worker. And we're going to talk about a program today. Would you care to introduce your program?
My program is the Multidimensional Treatment Foster Care. And it's relatively new. We began in July of last year. By placing our first child in a treatment foster care home. These children are ranging from the ages of 6 and 12, and these children are coming into, have been in the foster care unit for a little while, and have been met with issues as far as behavior. Some children suffer from anxiety, depression, nightmares at night. They may not be doing very well in school. And so because they're having these struggles, then they're identified and placed into a treatment and foster care home with especially trained foster care families. These foster parents undergo a two-day training, especially to be trained to how to deal with the behaviors of the child that's coming into their home.
Okay, so... You've got this multidimensional treatment foster care, right? And I'm guessing typically stuff is like response to need, right? I mean, there's something comes along and it's like, okay, this isn't working right, and it's harming somebody or it's costing something, and so we're going to come up with something to fix it or help it. Was that the case here? And if so, who were the, you know?
Who are the players?
Yeah, and how are these kids different, and what kind of risks are they facing?
Well, originally, let me just give you a little bit of a background of this program came from. This program, we adopted this program from Oregon, Portland, Oregon, Eugene, Oregon.
I know Eugene. I worked with him.
Eugene's a good guy. They originally started this program working with teenage females that were on probation or that were in the juvenile system somehow or another. And so they began this model of it's pretty much conditioning them to do positive, have more positive behaviors than negative behaviors. So the whole model is based on rewards, a reward system. So every positive thing you do, you get a reward for it. For the little ones, it would be a sticker, a token, a happy
face. For the bigger ones, an iPod? No.
Well, for the bigger ones, then as they grow up, grow older, you need to give them better incentives. Money is always a good incentive, or a trip, to the movies.
Or the self-satisfaction of knowing you did the right thing.
That comes with it. Eventually, we hope that that's what it turns into, just knowing that you are doing
it's
a
like
good
job.
It's
like priming the pump, then.
Yes. So, you begin with small things, and then as they grow older, then the incentive grows.
With foster kids, you've got this universe of kids, I guess, that have the state has taken responsibility temporarily or long-term to basically be responsible as parents and raise these kids. We are now the state, the government. Is now mm-hmm. responsible for these kids turning out to be as cool as all of our kids mm-hmm. are ever.
So how did it evolve from being these young, teenage girls who are on probation, evolve into the foster care?
We saw that it worked. Mm-hmm. We saw that it worked with negative behavior and how to kind of mold them into, productive citizens as they grow mm-hmm. older. And so it was a model. There's actually three different models for each age mm-hmm. group. So in our program, we are focused in the ages of 6 to 12. And these children that have been in the foster care unit have been, unfortunately, in group homes. And because we are limited on the group homes that we have here in the county, we place some of our children out of county in group homes, Riverside County, San Diego County, wherever there is a place for them to be while, you know, they're able to reconnect with their biological family.
Or like a foster care exporting county.
Yeah, but that's unfortunate. And I've seen a lot of advertisement that Department of Social Services has put on those big billboards. And also at the mall, when you eat, mm-hmm. they have these little things, you know, become a foster parent. And all the different rewards you can get, you know, by becoming a foster parent. Fulfill, you know, not necessarily monetarily, yeah. but, you know, just helping the community and helping these kids.
Yeah, so that's our idea, is to bring back as many kids that are placed out of county back into a more traditional home environment. Instead of being in a group home, that's more of a little bit institutionalized because, you know, they're there with other kids. Sometimes their behaviors increase because they're living with a lot of
yeah,
other children
that's just, you know, yeah.
Yeah, that are also going through a difficult time. So our idea is to bring our kids back to the county, place them in a more traditional home that's trained and ready to deal with this child and help them, get further along, you know, help them in their educational aspect, help them with their, if they need therapy, if they just need some social skills. Some of these children, you know, are on medication due to the traumatic events in their life of why they're in foster care. Mm-hmm. And plus they're in a family that's caring and supportive and, you know, keeping a really close eye on them.
Can you imagine, I mean, just the trauma of being taken away from your parents and then you don't even, you have to be sent out of county because there's no one here in the county that wants to take care of you. So first, you know, you're taken away from your parents, and then your own community doesn't want you.
Yeah.
I mean, not really. But that's how maybe they could feel.
Still, you know, get placed in La Jolla or something. Though.
No, that doesn't work like that.
Right by the beach.
You're in Riverside or just, you know. No, not it's never in La Jolla, okay.
With foster kids, you're really taking on a big responsibility, though, aren't you? I mean, you're really kind of now it's the state's concern, I suppose, that these kids turn out really as well as they can.
And that's what our focus is. We want to make a difference. We want these kids to eventually be able to go back to their families. But a lot of the times, the families are not able to deal with the temper
or the behavior of
the child. Yeah, it's difficult and all the way around, but we want the child to just be more stable and more of a child instead of, you know, growing up and being this confused adult of what happened and never dealt with, you know, their trauma.
And not, like I'm going back, you know, you're placed out of county and you don't reconnect with your parents and you're not reconnected to your community because the community didn't have services for you.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's what
I'm going back. I feel really bad because I mean, I live in this community.
You're about ready to become a foster parent, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have a five-year-old right now. Four-year-old. She's enough. But, you know, just I feel bad because these kids, they don't, you know, they're taken away. What does it say about our community? I mean, we have a really good community here. And be nice to have enough places for these foster kids to be placed here and not be sent out of county.
Yeah. So that's a constant struggle that we have is finding enough foster homes. In order to have our kids here, stay in the county, stay in their school of origin, and be closer to their family, their biological family, you know, to allow visitation if possible, and be around their friends if they've made friends in their school, then they're able to stay mm-hmm. in their school and remain with their friends. Because a lot of times, that's what children cling to is something stable, and if that's their school environment and their friends that they see every day, then that's what, you know, we try to keep them there.
Now, this multidimensional treatment for foster children
mm-hmm.
is really focused on kids that are in group homes, correct?
We began our focus with the children in group homes to bring them back.
Okay, just out of curiosity's sake, how does a kid qualify for a group home? What kind of things are going on there that differentiates, I guess, from a foster home or something else?
A lot of times they've been in the system for a little while now. And
you guys are the system, right? I mean, mm-hmm. system, that's mm-hmm. what we're talking
about. They've been part of the Department of Social Services. They've been a foster child with social services, with Child and Family Services.
So their family ran into some difficulties. Mm-hmm. The courts got involved. There were safety or other types of issues mm-hmm. with the parents.
With the parents. There's a certain case plan that the parents are working on in order for the kids to come back into their home. To be reunited with their family. Sometimes that case plan isn't complete. The biological family isn't doing what they're needing to do.
Well, for anything else, there may be a level of ability even, because it's not like people are guaranteed to be able to do case plans. It's a challenge.
It is. And sometimes the families need therapy, mm-hmm. help. They need services.
So it didn't just start this generation. It's something that may be rolling along.
It is just something that has been going generation to generation. So these children have been removed for one reason or another. Sometimes they're put in foster homes, and the foster parent isn't well-equipped or well-trained to deal with this individual
whatever needs they have, that
this child has. And so they no longer can care for this
child.
Do
foster kids typically have a greater or a wider range of needs than your quote-unquote average everyday child on the street?
They do. Some do. You know, I don't want to...
What kind of stuff? There's some kids
that have been able to deal and cope with the situation, with their family situation.
Yeah,
they're very resilient.
You know, some children have been through very traumatic experiences, and there's some children that may have been too young to even remember, so they have no memory of it. So it's just depending on their age and how well they dealt with it at the time.
So you do some sort of initial assessment then, I guess, to kind of get a sense of what type of support the child's going to need.
We do. We work hand-in-hand with behavioral health. And so each child that comes into our program is assessed by behavioral health.
Put my hand down. Stop. Okay, I got it. You don't need to hold my hand to make the analogy. Okay.
And so every child has come in for an assessment gone through a test, and then we're able to determine what are the issues that this child is
dealing
with.
How you best could meet their needs.
Yes.
If you do the assessment for the child, do you also, once you figure out where to place them? Or do you have parents where, you know what, we'll place this child here because it's a low risk, or
left-handed kids do really good in this home.
So, you know, just, you know, also the parents, do you also assess that? Or?
We do. It's really important that's one of our main focuses is to match them appropriately. You know, if the child is, depending on male or female, some foster parents can choose whether they want a male or female, depending on the children in their home, whoever they feel safe having in their home. And, you know, Spanish-speaking, English-speaking, we want to make sure that the child is able to communicate well with the foster parent and with the other, you know, individuals in the home. Where they live, what school they're attending, is the foster parent willing to transport the child to their, you know, school of origin? Just different things come up. You know, these children in this treatment foster care home, in this treatment foster program, they need their own individual bedroom. They are not able to share, so they need their own space. So we have to make sure that this foster home has that room available for just that one child, and making sure that the other children in the home have their own bedroom mm-hmm. as well. You know, if they're sharing.
Do you have there is a need of foster parents here in the Imperial County, but do you have a certain area parents that, you know, more Spanish-speaking, more English-speaking, more mm-hmm. African-American, or in what cities do you have more of a need?
We have more of a need here in El Centro. We have a lot of foster parents that speak Spanish. We have a lot that are bilingual, very few that are just solely English-speaking. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of foster parents in Calexico. We have a lot of good foster parents that come out of Calexico, and a lot of people in the process that are in Calexico, but we do need more homes in El Centro.
El Centro residents, step up to the plate.
Yeah. You've been called out.
You've been called out.
And, you know, in the you know, bordering, well, the outskirts, Hopeville, Sealy, those kind of areas also. Because there are such small towns and, you know, there's less people willing to become foster parents because, I mean, there's a smaller population there.
Good for kids, if they wanted to be a foster parent, who would they call?
They would call Department of Social Services at the in Child and Family Services at 482-2000.
Or could they go online?
I don't know. Good question. I'll look into that. Right now, what our process is they usually call 482-2000, and they ask for Rosario. She's a social service.
Or they could just say, I want to be a foster parent.
Foster parent. Who do I talk to?
And it's right there in the little cards that
and I'm from
they
El
had
Central,
them right there at the mall.
And I heard it on Let's Talk About It, and they promised me free stuff if I called.
No, I saw it at the mall while I was eating at the food court.
Oh, and I'm going to get a mall gift certificate.
Or the billboard as you're driving. You've been pushing a lot, Department of Social, so there is a need. I mean, there's a great need.
And so from our recruitment of traditional foster parents, we actually ask the individuals that are interested if they're willing to be part of this treatment in foster care because it's so much more work, so much more detail is put into this treatment in foster care. We ask a lot more. They meet weekly. They need to take the children to appointments with behavioral health, with the therapist. There's visitation. There's just a lot more that's involved in this program. For example, the foster parents that are in this treatment foster care program are called on a daily basis. I call them on a daily basis, so they need to be available every day. You know, they give me a time when's the best time to call them. And they give me a report every day of the child's behaviors the day before. So it's very intensive, but at the same time, the child is getting so many more services. And the foster parent is also getting a lot more support.
Mm-hmm. With caseload like that, it sounds like you can have a finite number of people, unless there's lots and lots of you hanging out, calling people every day.
Well, right now, we have three children placed. So that's
three phone calls per day. Okay, that's doable.
Our max is 10. In this program, we are looking to have 10 treatment foster care homes because of what is involved with each individual home. There's only so much, so much staff.
Comparatively, how many kids are in group homes right now? I mean, how many kids
do you have? Yeah, how many
if
kids?
You had unlimited resources.
How many foster kids do we have in Imperial County?
We have
even including the ones that are out of county place.
Approximately 300.
Wow.
It's about 275 to 300. And it changes every day, depending on...
And of those, how many 6 to 12 in group homes?
Yeah, you know what? Unfortunately, we are having a difficult time getting referrals for that age group. There's a lot of need for 12 and, older.
Yeah.
And so right now, we are looking for more referrals. We are needing more referrals. And the referrals come internally. They come from the social worker, the ongoing social worker that has in the foster care, and they refer. You know, if their child and on their caseload is having a difficult time, the foster parent or the group home is about to say, you know what, we've done everything we can. This child needs to be placed somewhere else. Then that's where we come in.
But also the foster parents can ask. Can it come from foster parents since they're the ones that are living with this? With a child?
Typically, the foster parent is the one that talks to the social worker and says, I don't know what else
Houston.
To do.
Houston.
Yeah. I don't know what else to do. I'm done. I don't know. And they're just out of ideas. And that's when the social worker...
What kind of behavior? So what is it that might prompt them to make that referral?
A lot of times it's problems at school, problems socializing. They get into a lot of fights because they're treated differently. Some way or another, they find out that they're a foster child, and unfortunately, they get bullied, they get looked at differently, and they know that, and they walk around knowing that they're a little bit different than everybody else that grows up in their family,
their mom and dad.
And so at times, they are targeted. Unfortunately, it's something that happens, and they're treated differently, and the only thing they know how to do is to fight. And they don't make friends very well. And so we help them. That's something that we match them with a skills coach. And this skills coach takes them out once a week and teaches them how to, you know, go to the park and play with the other kids, you know, go play basketball, get in a team, and what it is to be a team player and what it is to make friends and what it is to be courteous and kind and, you know, simple things of going to a restaurant and ordering mm-hmm. your food and saying please and thank you and, you know, just that interchange with other people mm-hmm. And how to deal with people confronting you, when it is okay to just let it go or walk away. You know, just the skills coach gives them a lot of, you know, a lot of tools to be able to just not get into confrontation. Mm-hmm.
We're here with Alejandra Rodriguez, social worker four, from Department of Social Services. We're talking about multidimensional treatment foster children and how
care.
We do that. We'll be right back after this break and talk more about this program.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. A 5 to 6 minute highlight podcast of the same show is available on KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You're still listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio with Scott and Maria. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. El Centro residents, Imperial residents, if you're interested in becoming a foster care parent, please call us right here at 337-8874.
And thanks, as always, to our executive producer, Mario Espinosa, who is playing trumpet on the intro song. So, great job, Mario. Way to bring it. We're back with Alejandra Rodriguez, social worker for Department of Social Services, talking about multidimensional treatment for...
Foster care.
Yes.
MTFC. Which fortunately, I guess, doesn't spell an acronym name, right? I mean, you guys don't like kind of mumble.
MTFC.
You haven't come up with a way to say it in one word yet, have you?
No, we haven't. We refer
too
to
long.
MTFC.
MTFC.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So it's a good deal for everybody, isn't it? I mean, this multidimensional treatment for foster care benefits kids.
Yes.
Benefits the county.
Yes.
Benefits the families. Benefits the foster care providers. Do they get a stipend for this?
They do. The rate is a little bit higher than the traditional foster care rate. And they, you know, they get support. They get all their medical expenses of the child, vision, dental is all covered by Medi-Cal. Their living expenses are covered.
So kids still mm-hmm. in the Medi-Cal system, kids actually still get all their stuff, or are we taking some stuff away yet?
Foster children get everything.
Oh, okay, mm-hmm. good.
Yeah, Medi-Cal does cover everything for the foster care children. They're also given a clothes allowance for the child. So it's there's no money, out-of-pocket money for the foster parents. Everything is, all their expenses are covered.
Okay. Do they mm-hmm. get specialized training prior to becoming this person?
They do. All foster parents that come into the treatment foster care.
That dial 482-2000 right now.
482-2000. They do receive two extra days of training. And these are additional training.
In Hawaii.
I wish.
No.
I want to get trained.
Here locally.
Unfortunately, at CalWORKS is where usually we have our
training.
It's
actually pretty chilly there in the training rooms.
It is very chilly in there. This is aside from the training that they needed to take when they get licensed as a foster care home.
What kind of training do they receive?
The 2 days of training is learning what the model is, learning what the reward system is, learning what types of behaviors they're going to be facing once the child is in their home. And then we tell them of all the support they're going to have. We tell them what each individual of our team, what we all do, what our duties are, who to go to with what issues, questions, you know, comments, whatever they're needing to talk to somebody about, who do they address that to.
So these multidimensional foster parents will only have a child?
One child. The MTFC homes are placed with one child in their own individual bedroom.
Mm. So it's a real specialized. So it's the parents' primary job then is to catch them being good, it sounds like.
Catch them being good, yes.
And how, is that something that I mean, you've got three working families right now. Is that something that people just take to, or does it require a little extra work, or how's
it's
that work?
It's probably extra work.
It is extra work because they have to document a lot of things. They have to, for example, give me report, and they have to keep a report, you know, of all their behaviors of the child the day before in order for to give them to me.
So when you're calling every day?
Every day.
And so you call up and you say, like, well, how's Johnny? And I say, oh, yeah, he's cool. Everything's fine.
But
that doesn't work?
Yeah, no.
What kind of information do you look for?
So on the report, we ask bedwetting. Did they wet their pants? Did they have night problems sleeping? Do they have anxiety? Are they, you know, just a list of
every day.
Behavior.
You're asking every day.
Every day. Did they do this? Did they do this? And it's either a scale of, it's 0 to 2. 0, not happening. 1, but yes, it did occur, but it wasn't stressful. And 2, it occurred and it was stressful.
Now, what happens, you know, a lot of the jobs are from 8 to 5, and sometimes 8 to 6. Now, most of the time these kids are in school most of the day. They get out at 2 or 3. Now, what happens if it's 8 o'clock at night or 7 o'clock at night, you know, they're trying to get them to go to sleep or take a bath, and the child starts to throw a tantrum or... You know, just it's
oh,
something
I see
happens,
where you're going.
And
the support's all gone home.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, you know, just like, hey, for example, pediatricians. A lot of the times, most of the kids get sick on the weekend or at night, and what other options do you have?
Yeah, ER.
Yeah, exactly. Which
so in our program, another additional service that is given to the treatment foster care homes is they're able to call somebody 24/7, even on the weekends. Even at 3 in the morning.
Wow.
If there's a crisis going on in the home and the parent has done everything they can, they've used their training materials, and, you know, this child is just not going to come out of their crisis.
So I can't just put the person on speed dial and put the cell phone in the bed of the kid and say, hey, just push the button, man. I'm going to sleep.
I'm going to bed.
No.
No, we actually have our program supervisor that is on call 24/7. So
has there been any calls?
There have been.
Oh,
and,
wow.
You know, luckily everything has worked out. If needed, the program supervisor speaks to the child on the phone. And if, you know, that doesn't help, then he's able to go to their home.
Is there a bond? I'm assuming then that there's some bond between the kid and the program supervisor, that these two people know each other?
They do.
Stranger telling me to sit down and be quiet.
We all have met the child at one point or another. Some work very closely with the child, and some don't have very much communication with the child. The program supervisor is the initial person.
Is that like grandpa or grandma or something? I mean, does it match family structure or no?
The program supervisor?
Yeah. Would it be representative of like the kid's grandma or grandpa? You know what I mean?
The program supervisor is working with behavioral health. And so the program supervisor is the one that assessed the child initially when coming into the program.
Okay.
So the child knows, is very familiar with who the program supervisor
is. The greeter.
Okay.
Is the greeter, is the welcome to our program person. And this person comes to the home regularly to check up, to talk, to, you know, to chat with the child, see how everything's going. And so they have a lot of communication.
Now, we've been talking about the child, the services for the child, for the foster parents. What about the biological parents?
The biological,
What do you do with the biological? These services are for foster parents, for the child, foster child. What about the biological parents?
So at the same time a biological family is identified, whether it be the mother, the father, aunt, uncle, grandma, grandpa, whoever it is, sometimes it's even, family members, distant family members, really close, you know, friends of the family that have come, have stepped up and said, you know what, I would like this child, I would like to adopt or, you know, have this child be in my care once they're done with this program. So during this time that the child, the foster child, is in the treatment foster care home, their biological family, and we identify them as the aftercare family, is also undergoing therapy with a family therapist. So they have sessions with a family therapist once a week. And that's when the reports that I take come into play. All the behaviors of that child, of that particular child, are targeted, identified, and that's what they work on with the biological family, with the aftercare family in therapy. So if this child is exhibiting temper tantrums, then that's what we talk about, and that's what the therapist talks about in their sessions with the aftercare family. Of
preparing them
for the behaviors of that individual child. So everything is tailored for each child.
Now what is the number one reason kids are taken away from parents?
Here in the Valley, we see a lot of drug use. We see a lot of domestic violence, just a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety, a lot of undealt with trauma in the parents' life that has just, has just been a problem
of enough substance
life.
That it leads to unsafe or neglectful or deemed or abusive, I suppose, situations.
So are those issues addressed?
Yes. At a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
Because we try to focus on the behaviors of the child. If we started with therapy for the individual person, that would be years mm-hmm. of therapy. So we make sure that the family is stable, that they're just able to care for someone else. I mean, if they're okay, then we focus on having the child come back into their home.
Well, for example, the drug use. There's no, there was programs for women. Now it's gone, the perinatal. But it might come back, who knows. But what other options? What do you do? Who do you refer? There's faith-based treatment.
Yeah.
Faith-based programs, because it's not really treatment. It's faith-based programs, but sometimes faith-based programs, it's not for everyone.
Yeah, it just...
out of county? Send them to out of county?
It's kind of a hit and miss sometimes. They are given a case.
Well, that's kind of discerning because, if you want to get these kids reunited by their parents, but we don't have the services here in the county.
You're saying we put all the investment into the kids, and that's wonderful.
Exactly.
And your parents aren't ready to do it because they haven't been given the support.
Exactly. Yeah. There's not the
Yeah, you're right.
Support.
That is kind of scary, huh?
So what do you...
At the same time, these aftercare families are receiving services from social services, and they have to find help. There are different areas outside of the county that are residential treatment.
But then what do you do once, let's say it's a female and, she was getting Medi-Cal, she was trying to sustain, the kids are taken away, there's no more Medi-Cal, so how can she get treatment?
Ooh, Section 8 housing's gone.
Section 8, there's no more housing, there's no more Medi-Cal to get her treatment.
And I don't have a car,
and
I
don't have a car.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what do you do?
The bus doesn't go all the way to my house or, Yeah, it's always something, but it is a struggle. It is a struggle that they have to overcome. And
but how can they overcome the struggle if there's no services?
I guess the question is it a good investment? because ultimately if it saves taxpayers and saves the county money to invest in these parents so that they're long-term stable, or your aftercare families, I forget this is like a special name, so that they're long-term stable and able to maintain the child successfully, mm-hmm. and then the child doesn't, re-systemize or marry and have kids and re-systemize those kids or whatever. It seems like that would be a wise investment.
Well, one of the reasons why perinatal closed is because there was not enough referrals. But if one of the reasons kids are being taken away is because of the drug use, women's, the mother's or parents' drug use, then...
So you're saying with 300 foster kids, there must be a bunch of parents out there that need...
Yeah. I'm just saying that. But the perinatal had to close because there was not enough referrals. So now how can we connect? The ultimate goal is to connect the kids back to their parents. That's the ultimate goal. And get them back into a safe place, a nurturing place. But if the parent is not able to get that services, even if you go into therapy, they still need a type of treatment besides the therapy. And how can you get that? We're investing all this money and this time to these foster kids, and we found these great foster parents. Let's say you have all these foster parents and they're trained and everything, but do we want these kids to be in foster care for the rest of their life? We want them back with their family, but the family needs the resources and the services. So we're hoping to open up the perinatal program soon.
Well, you make a really compelling case.
Well, I mean, yeah, hopefully it turns, you know, we're planning to open it, you know, next month or in July, but we're hoping that there's going to be a lot of referrals for this need.
Yeah.
So.
And I hope so.
I hope so.
I mean, because then that would help us.
I mean, this is coming from, I've gone to my doctor, my annual checkup, and she sees, you know, that's Dr. Chivas, and she sees, you know, she delivers a lot of babies, and a lot of babies are coming positive with methamphetamine and drugs. So hopefully when we open up the perinatal program, there's referrals.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
They'll all have a safe place to go.
Yes, yes. That'll be nice.
I get a question. I'm going to go back to this multidimensional thing here. So do your kids show an extinguishing of the problem behaviors in your the three families that you're working with?
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned temper tantrums. Let's assume that you've got a kid and they're throwing, I don't know.
At 2 o'clock in the morning?
What's a good number of temper tantrums to raise concern? Probably 10 a day. Okay, 10 a day. Yeah, that would be a problem.
Yes.
You know, a three-year-old's probably do that, but typically not older kids. So you've got 10 a day. Are you seeing that with this levels of support with your program supervisor, with your visits, with the coach, with all the other elements of this program, that the temper tantrums go down to 2 a day or 1 a day or 0 a day or something?
They do eventually because the children then learn, and because there's a reason behind their temper tantrum. There's a reason.
Sure, it works.
Okay. They don't get what they want.
They're trying to say something, but because they may not have the tools, they may not have the vocabulary, or they just don't know how to express their feelings. They know either, you know, mad.
I'm pretty clear when they're having a temper tantrum what they're feeling.
Because, you know that's how they express that they're angry.
Sure,
instead
sure.
of saying, you know, and this is, you know, one of the tools that we give to the foster parents is, I feel because. And so they teach them to sit down and say, I feel sad because I miss my mom. And so then that helps the foster parent understand what the child is going through, what's going on in their mind. Maybe there was a memory, maybe there was something that triggered a memory of their mom or dad, and they're just really sad because they're not with them. And so that's what we want our kids, the foster children, to learn, is how to express themselves.
Identify feelings.
Identify
their feelings. Call them the right name. And
yes.
And identify where that's coming from instead of being angry.
Now they're expressing their feelings in another way.
Yeah.
So you're tracking the frequency of the behaviors and stuff like that? And
so that's what we do. We actually have a graph that shows
chart up on the wall.
We have a really good system that we're able to check off, you know, stressful, not stressful, didn't happen. And this develops a graph of the behaviors.
And the relative stress.
Okay.
And the stress. And there's, you know, comments of what happened that day. They, you know, because that it doesn't help to know, okay, they threw a temper tantrum. Why? What happened? What triggered it?
Okay.
Because I hauled
what
them off to
going
the
through?
Store without a nap after school and didn't feed them.
They're hungry. Oh. They slept for 3 hours last night and they went to school and they had a full day.
The perfect storm.
Yeah.
So, you know, you wonder, what is it, you know, that's triggering this? So, you know, it's a comment, and so that's what they work on, and it's graphed, and it shows the progression of, you know, these behaviors escalate, then they come down, then they have another behavior, and it comes down. And
but you know what? It would be great also for just parents in general.
It does work with
your own,
home,
with my game.
It really
yeah.
does.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. Well, sure. It's a more systematized way of doing what parents may be doing in their head anyway.
Yes.
I mean, ultimately, you're trying to coach behavior into less problematic and more socially acceptable fashion all the time.
Yeah.
Do you see, I mean, I don't know if you've had any children yet that have returned to their aftercare families.
We have one. We have one graduate.
And
from our program.
How long do you track the behaviors after they graduate?
90 days.
Same as cash.
So they're back. Are they back with their natural biological
yes.
parents? Wow.
This individual child went back to her mother. So and along with her four other siblings.
And
so
did the stuff spike? Did you see the behaviors jump up?
Absolutely. You can see the difference of you know, when she gets into the treatment foster care home, her behaviors escalate. I mean, it's, you know, a peak. You can see it, and then eventually just comes down. There's a gradual, you know, downward
an adjustment period.
Yeah,
how long did it take? What was it?
She was in the program for 6 months. We usually would like for the children to be in the program 9 to 12 months. Mm-hmm. Just so...
Gestational.
9 to 12 months.
That's a long time.
That gives us enough time to work. I mean, because sometimes they come with so many, you know, issues to work on. And so that gives us enough time to mold them and work with them and work with the aftercare family.
We're here with Alejandra Rodriguez. She's a social worker for the Department of Social Services. We're talking about multidimensional
treatment
for
foster care.
Yes. The difficult acronym without a special name. So, do you continue your coaching model with these families after they reunite? Do you continue with the same coaching and phone calls and all the other stuff for that 90-day period?
So what's involved in those 90 days is they continue to see a therapist. They continue to see the skills coach. I no longer call for the report because I only would talk to the foster parents. Once they're in the aftercare home, then it's more the responsibility of the therapist to keep track of them. But they still have a social worker, an ongoing social worker that is tracking their progress.
Mm. So in MTFC, multidimensional treatment foster care, you have a skills coach, you have your social worker, and you have a therapist.
And then the program manager.
And the program.
And then the teachers are also involved. And then they have a social worker that's the ongoing social worker.
So you have several people in the program involved at all times.
We do. That is why there's so much support for this foster parent. So, you know, when they're at odds and they have no idea where to go, there's always somebody there that's going to be able to help them.
How do you pull the teachers in? You mentioned...
You know, the program supervisor goes to their identified school, wherever the child is going to be attending, and talks to the principal. The principal then identifies who the teacher is going to be, and then the program is we cover what the program is, what we're working on. You know, we let the teacher know this is a foster child. These are the problems that they may, you know, be exhibiting in class. How to deal with them? You know, what kind of tell them what we're doing at home, what the foster parents are doing at home, so then we can carry it into the classroom.
So if you could get a parallel process, like a cut and paste thing where the teachers are reinforcing and rewarding the same behaviors in the same ways.
And they're also sent home with a daily report of their behaviors at school.
Because, I mean, teachers are a big part. You know,
huge part. You know, our kids spend most of their time with teachers.
Every day, five times a week.
So if teachers have lots of kids and lots of other responsibilities. Have they been able to kind of carve out room for this? Or
you know, fortunately, we have been working with really good schools. And the principals have allowed it, and the teachers have welcomed it, and we work very closely with them.
But with these budget cuts, that could change too. I mean, teachers might end up with a bigger class, more kids, and then you end up with this, you know, this child that has, you know, behavior problems in this program, and wow,
yeah,
it's going to be difficult.
Yeah. How easy is it sometimes schools have zero tolerance for certain types of behaviors. And these are behaviors that may be, in fact, common for distressed foster children to be exhibiting. I mean, these may be your exact target behaviors, maybe zero tolerance things. Is it easy to maybe keep a kid in school if some of the stuff they do is really kind of scary?
To keep them in school.
Yeah, well, not to have them expelled or suspended or, you know, whatever.
They do fall into a special category because they're foster children. And because some of these children do have behavioral issues and have been identified with maybe a learning disorder, so they do fall into a special category that suspension or expulsion is sometimes not the way that they go. They're given more services, more attention, maybe moved into a special classroom, a smaller class size. We have Vista Sands in Calexico that also works with our foster children. So it's looked at in a different way because of the category that they fall into.
So you really stop and kind of look at their individual support needs from an educational standpoint
also.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the schools do work with us, and they understand that these children are going through, you know, special circumstances, and so that they do need more services.
Besides you, are there other social workers that are trained in MTSD?
Are you it?
Are you the person?
I am the only one.
I am the acronym.
I did name the program. No, I did go. I was able to go to Oregon and get trained along with my supervisor.
Oh, how nice.
Alejandra Rodriguez, multidimensional. So you have your supervisor, too, who could, and then eventually, I suppose, as this gets roots and puts down roots and shows some worth, then we'll be able to expand it.
And follow the model.
Yes.
Now, pretty much everybody listening this morning is ready to throw down and become a foster parent because they realize now that this is an unmet community need and they want to be part of this. And they feel
we are a caring community.
Surge of generosity.
We want our
swelling
our
up within
to
them.
Be, you know, good citizens,
good
grow
citizens.
Up and
be stable.
Be stable.
Mario's
and contribute to our community.
Charging his iPhone right now so he can make the phone call. What's the number again?
482-2000. And ask for Rosario or Alejandra.
And they'll walk through the process,
right? Yeah.
And I think I was ringing the little car, you know, you're looking for empty nesters, you know, people who don't have kids, you know, just have a home.
And have room. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, kids go away to college and they leave their room
and people who are retired, sometimes they go, well, you know, okay, I've done this, I've done that, okay, now I'm...
What now?
People
that work full-time... married couples, single family homes, single mother, single father, grandparents, even...
So don't automatically assume, I guess, that you're not the ideal...
We're not looking for, you know, mother-father type of
nuclear
home.
Nuclear family...
Mm-hmm. We even have foster parents that it's a brother and a sister. Mm-hmm. That they live together and they're both foster parents.
Oh, wow.
So... You know, it's just as long as you have home, you're stable, you have no criminal background, and you're willing to open up your home to a child and to social services, then give us a call.
Great.
Again, the phone number?
482-2000.
Thank you for coming aboard today, Alejandra.
Thank you.
Welcome back. So we'll see you in another 2 weeks or what?
Another 2 weeks? You were here 2 weeks ago, so we can...
Maybe.
Good. It's a pleasure having you.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
And thank you all for listening today.
Yes.
Welcome. And enjoy your weekend. And join us again next Thursday morning for another adventure with Let's Talk About It, Your Voice for Wellness.
Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KGBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXRadio.com.